Hi, this is David Flowers, Senior Pastor at Grantham Church, an intergenerational, convergent, third-way congregation with the Brethren in Christ U.S. and located in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. I want to thank you for listening to our podcast and for following the sermons that I and many others preach at Grantham. This is a free podcast, and it'll always be that way, but if you'd like to give and help further the work we're doing for the kingdom, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to do that, you can do that by going to granthamchurch.org and clicking on the Giving tab. Whether you're a member of our church or you're listening as a parishioner, it's our greatest desire that you would encounter Jesus and be changed by the good news wherever you are. Anyway, God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the podcast.
It's a delight to be back here in the pulpit at Grantham Church and to be joined by Jeff to share with you today what the Bible tells us about grief and loss and the way that we can cope and become resilient. As Melissa shared, we have been co-teaching our grief group support groups here for the last few years. Several of you have joined in those sessions with us. Both Jeff and I have had our share of loss and grief in our lives. And through those personal experiences and our professional experiences as a doctor and a pastor, we recognize the great need there is for an understanding about grief and loss, an understanding of what the scriptures tell us and how we can responsibly and graciously cope with grief and ways in which we can grow within that journey. Possibly you sit here this morning and you say, MJ, that really doesn't affect me right now. But I dare say that one thing that is a given about all of us is that we have all lost someone or something that's been important to us. Whether we're 5 years old or 100 years old. Loss can profoundly impact our emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual well-being, influencing how we navigate life and how we cope with change. To take a firsthand look at those losses, we're going to ask you to participate in this next exercise with us. So if you have lost a spouse, a parent, or a child, would you stand up with Jeff and me?
And stand up if you have lost a relative or a close friend.
If you've lost someone through separation, a difficult breakup, or a divorce, join us.
If you've lost autonomy, the loss of doing things on your own through aging, injury, or illness, such as losing your driver's license or not being able to go places on your own.
Or if you've lost really close friendships and or a family home because you had to relocate, stand up.
If you've lost a career due to layoffs or retirement, stand up.
Or if you've lost mobility or a function of your body, such as losing your hearing or your vision or your memory.
If you've lost stability due to catastrophe like fire, hurricane, or drastic economic straits.
Or if you've lost the life that you were dreaming of and it never happened.
If you've lost security following trauma, violence, or abuse.
And last but not least, if you've lost a pet. Take a look around. Almost everyone is standing. You may be seated. Possibly like Jeff and me, you could have stood up more than once. Loss is a universal part of our human experience and affects all of us throughout our lifetime. Loss encompasses anything that alters a familiar pattern of behavior, challenges our identity, or forces us to adjust to a new reality. Losses in our lives create grief in our hearts and in our minds. Jeff, grief is a universal human experience. How do we here in the United States express our grief compared to others in other areas of the world?
Grief is a universal experience, but it is expressed through vastly different cultural lenses, ranging from stoic silence to loud, boisterous public mourning. Western cultures like ours often focus on private, time-limited emotional processing. But in other cultures, especially in Asia, Africa, and some indigenous cultures, it's treated as a communal, long-term spiritual event that maintains bonds with the deceased. I think we can learn from some of these other cultural practices. As we will discuss today, grief lasts. It doesn't go away as many people think it does. It becomes part of who we are, and we need to recognize that in how we grieve. Grief changes over time, and we are changed. MJ, tell us what the scriptures talk about to discern how we as Christians should deal with the many losses and griefs in our lives.
One of the greatest gifts that the Bible gives us is permission to grieve. It never tells us to pretend that pain doesn't exist or that faith means we never cry. Instead, scriptures show us that grief is a natural response to loss, and that God meets us right in the middle of our grief. So let's look at some of those scriptures. Let's look at John 11, 35. Jesus wept. Those two words are the shortest verse in the Bible, yet they reveal profound truths about the heart of God. Let's recall the setting of the story where Jesus wept. Jesus arrived in the village of Bethany after hearing of the death of his friend Lazarus. Lazarus had now been in the tomb for 4 whole days. Mary and Martha, his sisters, are brokenhearted. Friends and neighbors have gathered to mourn. And what's remarkable is that Jesus already knew what he was going to do. He had already told his disciples that Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. He knows he's about to raise Lazarus from the dead. And yet before that a miracle occurs, Jesus stops. He weeps. He weeps. The text doesn't say Jesus cried because he lacked hope. He knew resurrection was moments away. Instead, his tears reveal several important truths. First, Jesus shares in our sorrow. Jesus did not remain emotionally detached. He entered into the pain that Mary and Martha were feeling. He allowed himself to feel the same. He is not indifferent to human suffering. When we grieve, he's not off watching in the distance. He is Emmanuel. He is right here with us. Secondly, grief is not a sign of weak faith. Sometimes people believe Christians shouldn't cry because they have hope. Jesus' actions demonstrated otherwise. The Son of God cried openly. If Jesus could weep and he had no sin, then our tears are not evidence of unbelief. Our tears are evidence of love. We grieve because we love deeply. And thirdly, Jesus' tears also reveal God's heart towards death. Death was never part of God's original creation. It entered our lives because of sin. So Jesus stands before this tomb, not accepting death as normal, but confronting it. His tears become part of his battle against the brokenness of this world. Soon he's going to call, "Lazarus, come out." The one who weeps is also the one who overcomes death. What does that mean for us? Many people think that healing begins when the tears stop. But the Bible teaches us something very different. Healing begins when we bring our pain, our suffering, our emotions, our tears to Jesus. He does not ask us to hide them at all. He receives them. He takes them. He weeps with us. Let's look at Psalm 34:18. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. This verse was written by King David during one of the darkest seasons of his life. He had experienced fear, rejection, loneliness, betrayal, uncertainty. He knew what it meant to have a broken heart. The Hebrew concept of brokenhearted is that something is shattered. Like a clay pot that falls on the ground, it's not just cracked, it's broken into zillions of pieces. Many of you know that feeling. A spouse dies. An adult child walks away. A diagnosis changes everything. A dream collapses. Life can leave us shattered in zillions of pieces. David says something extraordinary here. Not just that God notices the brokenhearted, and he certainly does, nor merely that he remembers them. David says he is near to them. He is near to them. Sometimes grief makes us feel abandoned, and we wonder, where are you, God? Why doesn't he answer me? Doesn't he even see me? But Psalm 34 answers those questions. God is closest precisely when we often feel most alone. His nearness is not always something that we're going to feel emotionally. Sometimes we have to trust by faith that he is near. Like the footprints in the sand that are hidden beneath the waves, God's presence may not always be visible, but they're always right there. He's right there with us. The psalm also reminds us that God saves those who are crushed in spirit. To be crushed is to have all your strength pressed out of you. Grief can do that. It can rob us of energy, of sleep, of concentration, of joy and hope. David reminds us that God specializes in meeting people who have nothing left. He is especially present with those who know they cannot continue to carry on life alone. So bringing these two scriptures together, John 11:35, that shows us the heart of Jesus, and Psalm 34:18, that shows us the promise, we have a beautiful story to cling to when we're grieving. Jesus weeps with us. God stays near us. Jeff, help us to understand the application of these biblical truths. How long does grief last? What can we do on our grief journey that enables us to find joy and hope in the midst of sadness and pain?
I have to tell you all, I love to talk about grief. And I love to talk about it. It must seem strange to many of you because it's a topic that's full of pain and suffering and sadness. But the more I learn about grief, the more I see a message of hope and even of opportunity. And I hope that we can give you a flavor for that today. So on the screen is a slide that shows two models of grief. The top set of circles is the model that many of us have known through our lives. And that model, just to describe it, first of all, the black outline circle represents our life. And the red shaded circle represents grief. And initially, when you have grief, it can overwhelm your life and feels like it fills your life, as it shows in this illustration. And then the old model is that grief slowly gets smaller and smaller and smaller and goes away. That's not how it happens. The second set of circles is the more current feeling about grief. And in that model, you can see that the red shaded grief circle doesn't really get any smaller. It stays. Our grief changes, but it doesn't go away. On the other hand, the black outline circle is getting bigger and bigger. So what happens is our life grows around our grief. We need to take time to grieve, and we need to reconcile those painful emotions. But we also need to take a break from grief and live our life. And it's in going back and forth from grieving to living our life that we move forward through our grief. The pain of grief is a direct result of the loss that we have felt. And the degree of our connection and our love for the person or the thing that we have lost is reflected in the degree of that pain. And the pain is unavoidable. But many times grief also involves prolonged suffering. And prolonged suffering is different from the pain. Prolonged suffering is something that is not so much directly related to the loss as it is to our response to the loss. And that's something we can change. So that's a lot of what we do in our grief groups. We work with people on learning how to change our response so that we don't have that prolonged suffering. We can't avoid the pain, but we can avoid the prolonged suffering. So how do we build hope through grief? Well, the first thing may sound a little strange, and that is that the first thing we have to do is accept that adversity and loss and suffering, they're part of life. We can't avoid them. Our culture tends to be one of entitlement, that we feel like we don't deserve this. But the reality is these losses and adversity, they are part of life. We can't avoid them. If we don't accept that inevitability of adversity, people tend to suffer more because of that. So I think the first thing is you have to accept that inevitability. The second thing I want to talk about with grief is that our brains have a negativity bias. So what that means is if you have a threat on this side, and on this side you have a beautiful rainbow, where should you be focusing your attention? Well, you better focus it on the threat, or you may not be able to enjoy any more rainbows. But when you're grieving, there's a lot of negativity, and it's easy to get stuck in that negativity. So we need to make a conscious effort to look for the good. And that can be hard to do, and it doesn't mean that we have to be an unrealistic optimist. It just means we need to be open to looking for the good and open to the joy that can result from seeing that good. And that's a very important part of grieving. Resilience is one of my favorite topics. Resilience is the ability to rebound from life's challenges and grow from them. And the time when resilience most commonly develops is when you're recovering from a traumatic loss, grief, basically. So there are multiple benefits to resilience, and I won't go through all of them, but some of the big ones that I want to mention today. First of all, is mental and emotional health. There are people in this world who are languishing, for lack of a better word that I'll use. And those are people who tend to be sad. They don't get joy out of life. They tend to be not operating at full productivity. They may have limited number of friends or superficial relationships with friends. And then on the other hand, there are people who are thriving. And those people are people who are optimistic, who have a positive outlook, who have lots of friends with deep relationships with those friends, and who operate at peak performance. And neuroscientists would tell you that the difference between people who are languishing and people who are thriving is resilience. And so that's a really positive thing. The other thing about resilience that I find encouraging and positive is that resilience, some elements of it anyway, can be contagious. So if you're around resilient people, you are more likely to develop resiliency skills. And resiliency isn't something that stops. You can progressively develop more and more resilience as time goes on. It doesn't have an end to it. So being around resilient people is a positive thing. It does help us to be, it is a contagious thing. And in regards to grief, it's helpful to understand that when someone is grieving, and you can support them by listening to them patiently and attentively, you can help that person grow and potentially develop resilience. But the really neat thing about it is that as you help that person and that person grows and they develop resilience, the caregiver also grows. And then the really neat thing is that, like I said before, resilience is contagious. So when other people around you see that resilience, they also grow. Isn't that a positive message? We coach the skills in grief class to help people learn how to move forward and to develop resilience. And two of the skills that we particularly work on, and we work on every week in our grief groups, the first is journaling. And journaling is basically, what you want to do in journaling is you want to take the emotions and the pain that's in your head and you want to put it on paper. And in that process, that helps you to work out the emotions of your grief. But the other thing that it does is when you put those emotions on paper in a journal, you can then close the journal and put it on a bookshelf. And your brain interprets that as you've done your grieving, and now you're going to put it aside. And so I mentioned before that we need to grieve, and we need to live our life. And when you journal like that, your brain is going to give you time to live your life. It's going to allow you to live your life and not go through the continuous pain that can be a part of grief. The other thing that we teach is mindfulness and meditation. Mindfulness is an awareness of things that are around you and things that are within you. And in regards to grief, mindfulness means an awareness of the emotions of grief, and that often means the pain of grief. Meditation is a more structured way where you can learn how to actually manage those emotions and deal with and process the emotions of grief. And that's what we want to do as we move forward through grief. MJ, can you tell us what the scriptures say about finding hope through lamenting?
The scriptures on lament teach us that grief is not something to suppress, something to deny, or to rush through. It's something that we bring honestly to God. It's the Bible's primary way of responding to suffering. Nearly one-third of the Psalms contain elements of lament, showing that God welcomes our cries as an expression of our faith. You might ask, what is lament? Well, lament is an honest conversation with God in the midst of our pain. It's more than simply complaining. It's bringing our sorrow, our confusion, our anger, our questions before God while continuing to seek Him. Unlike despair, which turns away from God, lament turns us toward Him. Hear this lament of David from Psalm 13. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. And the enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. Lament gives us permission to tell God the absolute, honest truth of how we're feeling. Many people think we must hide our emotions from others, from family, from friends, and even from God. But lament teaches us the opposite. God invites us to speak honestly about our pain. David prayed, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Those words sound raw, even shocking. Yet God included those in the scriptures. David wasn't rebelling against God. He was bringing his anguish to God. Lament says, God, this is how I feel. Even when our feelings are confusing, when they're painful. Our tears and our confusion as we grieve testify, like I said before, that someone or something mattered deeply to us. Don't apologize for your grief. Don't apologize for your tears. Don't apologize for lamenting, for it reflects the depth of your love. One of grief's greatest temptations is to isolate ourselves, not only from people, but from God. Sometimes in the depth of grief, we just draw within ourselves. Lament acknowledges that suffering is real and we need to be open about it. It never pretends that everything is okay. Jeremiah writes, and we heard this passage earlier, from Lamentations, I remember my affliction and my wandering. My soul is downcast within me. Healing begins when we stop pretending that we can do it on our own and it's going to go away. And it allows ourselves to acknowledge our loss. Jeff, guide us through the impact of grief in our lives as we acknowledge our loss. Many people who are going through grief talk about having a brain fog. What is that?
Yes, when people are going through a fresh grief, brain fog is often a prominent part of what affects them and their ability to function. And so I think it's helpful to go over, and some of this information, by the way, is very new. Even just this year, a large study was published on the neuroscience understanding of brain fog. And the way this works is that there are multiple brain networks that are involved in grief. And those networks are really cranked up when you're grieving. So the systems that are involved, there are memory systems, where we remember the people we've lost or the things that we've lost and good times we had with them. There are imagination systems where we have fears or concerns for the future and how we're going to function without what we've lost or who we've lost. There are attachment connection systems, which reflect the depth of attachment and the love that we had for people who are involved. And then there's the pain and the emotions that are directly related to the loss and the separation. So all of those systems are cranked up maximally. And all of those systems get processed in what's called our short-term memory. So we have our short-term memory capacity is somewhat limited. We have lots of long-term capacity in our brains for memory, but very limited short-term capacity. So you start adding memory systems and imagination systems and pain systems and attachment systems, and you're getting up close to filling up your short-term memory. So how does that affect us? Well, we use short-term memory for a lot of things. We use it for developing new memories. We use it for recalling things we're supposed to be doing. We use it for making decisions. And so what happens? So we get forgetful. We get mentally fatigued with minimal effort, with things that ordinarily we'd be able to do without thinking about them, and we can't do them as well. We have trouble concentrating, and the big one is decision-making. Decision-making requires a particularly large amount of short-term memory. So if you are grieving, you've probably noticed that at times that you may have difficulty making decisions. So how do we deal with these things? This can go on for weeks to months, is common in significant grief. So you need to prepare for that this may be a process that could be months that it goes on. It's not necessarily going to be continuous. It's not going to be every day. The days that you are more likely going to notice brain fog are holidays, anniversaries, birthdays, special days when you're going to be thinking more about the one that you've lost or the thing that you've lost. So how can we respond to that? Well, I think the most important thing to know is that when you are in fresh grief, it's best to avoid making major life decisions. Sometimes you can't avoid that and you have to do that, and there are ways we teach in grief class that you can try to get around that. But as much as you can, try to avoid major decisions. The second thing that you can do is to write things down. Just as I mentioned with journaling, when you write things down, your brain thinks you're taking those things out of your brain and putting it on paper. And then your brain frees up that space in your short-term memory for you to use for living your life. There's a lot of other techniques that we go over in depth in our grief classes, our grief groups, for getting around brain fog, but those are the big ones that I wanted to go over today. MJ, as we live in community, what do the scriptures help us understand about sharing our grief? And do we have any responsibilities to one another on this journey?
The role of the faith community is one of the Bible's clearest teachings about grief. While God comforts us personally, many times he chooses to use other people to do that. The church, you and I, we are called to become the hands, the feet, the voice, the heart of Christ to those who are grieving. Grief was never meant to be carried alone or in isolation. One of the greatest gifts that we can give someone who is grieving is simply our presence. Often we feel like we don't know what to say, but Scripture emphasizes that our presence is more important than any words we can say. Paul writes in Romans chapter 12, verse 15, "Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn." Notice he doesn't say, fix those who mourn. He doesn't say, use as many words as you can to explain to them what happened. He says, mourn with them, mourn with them. This requires entering another person's pain rather than standing at a safe distance or saying nothing because you aren't sure what to say. There's a beautiful example of this in the biblical story of Job. When Job experienced unimaginable loss, his friends, who didn't always do appropriate things, did something very right at this time. In Job 2:13, this is what we read. His friends sat on the ground with him 7 days and seven nights. No one said a word to him, because they saw how great his suffering was. 7 days and seven nights, just sitting there with him. Grieving people don't need explanations. They need companionship. Sometimes the most Christ-like ministry is simply saying, I'm here with you. And as the saying goes, people may forget what you've said, but they're going to long remember that you were by their side. Paul writes in Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens, and this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Grief is one of life's heaviest burdens. Sometimes people cannot carry everyday responsibilities because their emotional energy is exhausted as they grieve. The faith community can help to bear those burdens. They can provide meals, transportation, childcare, financial assistance, practical help around the home. Sometimes in grief, love looks like a casserole. Sometimes it looks like mowing the lawn. Sometimes it looks like sitting on the front porch, just providing company to someone who is grieving and a listening ear if they want to talk. All of it reflects the love of Christ. This last week, I had an experience with having some burdens carried by some of you in the Grantham Church. I didn't lose someone. I kind of lost my mind for a little bit, but I didn't lose someone. I'm selling my house in Grantham, and I had a buyer, and we're waiting for closing, and it rained and it rained and it rained, and I got water in my basement. And as my realtor worked with me, and we had people come in and give us and consult what the problem was, she said to me Thursday late morning, MJ, we got to take all the paneling off this wall and we got to get it cleaned up as soon as possible. I'll do this, but can you get people to help? I have to tell you, I am not very good at asking people to help me. But I said, okay, God, this is what I got to do. Who and what? And quickly, names came to mind and I sent a couple text messages and an email. And do you know that in an hour, three people responded to me and said, we'll be there this afternoon. And at 3 o'clock, six people showed up, got all the paneling down, got everything cleaned up. My realtor, who happens to be here today, said, this is amazing. I've never seen anything like this. That's what carrying each other's burdens is like. And we can do it for many different things in our lives, including when someone is grieving. Those six people are here today, and I want to thank them for helping to carry my burden this week. Jeff, the scriptures remind us in Psalm 30, weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. What should we know about sharing our grief journey that will enable us to move forward, finding joy among the anguish and pain of grief?
Yeah, I think this is a great topic to talk about today, because I'm sure there's probably more people here who know someone who is grieving than who are actually grieving right now. But I know we have both in the audience today. So I want to go over what things you can do to help people who are grieving, how you can support them. The first thing is to show up. Being there means more than anything you can say. So just being with someone, even if you're just silently sitting with them, is helpful. Or you could say something like, I don't know what the right words are, but I want to be here with you to help you. The next thing you can do is to listen attentively. Grieving people don't need advice. They need to be heard. They need to talk out their emotions and their pain and talk about their loss. And that's what we can do best to help them. And when you listen, the important elements for you are to listen attentively and non-judgmentally. Grieving people can sometimes say some really crazy things. So you have to withhold your judgment and not make any not make judgments about what they are saying, but beware that that can happen. The third thing, when the conversation pauses and it feels like you need to say something, you can reflect back what you have heard the other person say. So if they've been talking about a particularly painful topic, you can say something like, that sounds incredibly hard. What that's basically telling the person you're talking to is, tell me more, keep talking. And that's what you want to do, is get them to talk. The next element that's important is, if we're talking about loss of a person, is to use the name of the person who has died. First of all, that shows that you're not afraid of mentioning their name and that you're not afraid that it's going to make them cry. And probably that person isn't afraid of crying. They've probably already done some crying, and you don't need to be afraid of that. But using a name is helpful. Survivors usually are more concerned about their loved one being forgotten than they are about tears. And those tears are either their tears or your tears as the caregiver. So it's okay for you to cry too. That's not going to be a bad thing for when you're helping someone who's grieving. And the last thing is to offer specific help. I remember after my oldest son's death, so many people came and said, if there's anything we can do, let us know. And unfortunately, that generic kind of offer for help is not that helpful, because a grieving person, they can't think about what they need. They can't think about what they're going to be doing a minute from now, much less what they need tomorrow night or something like that. But offer things specific. So you might say something like, I can bring you dinner tomorrow night. Or one of my favorites for someone who is in fresh grief, and especially if you have an established relationship with that person and you're someone you feel who can talk to that person, is to offer to text them daily. And tell them that they don't need to respond, or they can just respond with an emoji if they feel a need to respond, but offer them a thought, like, I'm thinking of you. If you need to talk, give me a call. Most people who are grieving, they don't have the energy to start that conversation on their own. So if you send them a text and give them permission to make that call, you're much more likely to be helpful to them. So those are the things that you can do What are the pitfalls and what are the things you should try and avoid doing when you're talking to someone who's grieving? The first is to avoid statements like everything happens for a reason or they're in a better place. Those may be well-intended comments, but they can feel dismissive to someone who's grieving. And so it's best to stay away from statements like that. The next one that I would avoid is what I call the at least statements, such as, at least they didn't suffer. Well, that may on the surface seem helpful for someone who died suddenly and didn't have to suffer, but it doesn't take away the loss. And the person who hears that, they may initially be comforted by that, but then they may go home and think, well, I'm still here and I'm suffering. And so that often is not as helpful as it might seem at first. It minimizes the loss, and we don't want to do that. The next thing to avoid is comparing griefs. Imagine talking to someone, and I've been in this situation, who after you've had a loss of a very close friend or relative, and they say, I understand your grief. My pet just died last week, and it really hurts. And you think, oh my goodness, you're comparing your pet to my spouse. That's a dangerous statement to make. And comparing griefs is really not a good idea in general anyway. All our griefs are different. We all have special situations, special circumstances. Comparing one to another is a hazardous thing to do. And the last one, and the most important one of all, is rushing someone towards moving forward or moving on with their grief, or setting a timetable for them. Everyone has their own timetable. They don't know what that timetable it is, and you don't know what it is either. And trying to set limits on their grief is a dangerous thing to do. As we showed in the original illustration I showed with the concentric circles, grief lasts. It doesn't go away. It changes, but it doesn't go away. And so to think that there's an end to it is, I think, a hazardous thing to do. So I want to close, but before I close, I have a couple things I want to go over. One is that MJ and I will be leading a grief group starting in early October. If anyone would like to participate, please let us know. You know, at the beginning here, virtually everyone here was standing, so you've all been through grief, and we've shown you that grief lasts, it doesn't go away, so it's not inappropriate for any of you to come to that group. But please let us know if you have an interest in that. And after the service, MJ and I are going to be out here at the Welcome Center. If you have questions about grief or about the presentation today, or if you want to talk to us about caregiving in general, then please contact us out at the Welcome Center. I mentioned, MJ and I, in our participation, our work together on grief groups, we feel incredibly rewarded by what we see. It's hard to explain how gratifying it is to see people who come into the group and are in pain and suffering and confused and unsure how to move forward in life, and may even be questioning their meaning and purpose in life. And we get to coach them on how to work through those issues. And then we sit back and watch the magic and watch them grow and watch them develop resilience. And I can't tell you how rewarding that is. But there's another benefit that we see, and that is that as those people in grief group who were helping, as they grow, we grow. And then the real magic that I mentioned before is as we develop resilience, those of us around us develop resilience. Resilience is not a destination, it's a journey, and it can be contagious. And imagine the prospects for our church to be full of people who are growing, resilient, and thriving people. That's the kind of church we all want to attend. And we're all here on the journey together. Thank you.
In closing, we'd like to invite you to share in this prayerful, responsive reading that encourages us as we walk through loss and grief.
When our hearts are broken and our tears fall freely,
God is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit.
When we cannot find the words to pray,
the Spirit intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words.
When grief feels heavy and the future seems uncertain,
we trust that God will never leave us nor forsake us.
Jesus stood at the tomb of his friend and wept.
Our Savior understands our sorrow and shares in our grief.
Though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
we will fear no evil. You are with us, your God and your staff, they comfort us.
God welcomes our tears, our questions, and our lament.
We pour out our hearts before him, for he is our refuge.
Though sorrow may remain for a night,
joy comes in the morning through the faithfulness of God.
We remember those we love with gratitude.
We thank God for every precious memory and every gift of love.
We hold fast to the promise of Christ.
Because Jesus lives, we have hope beyond death.
One day God will make all things new.
He will wipe away every tear from our eyes. Death shall be no more. Neither shall the mourning or crying or pain anymore.
Until that day, let us encourage and walk with one another in our grief.
The Lord is our strength, our comfort, and our everlasting hope.